And when she would read to me, I figured out a few things. I heard the answers in the questions. So I'm the whole time she reading to me, I pause and I'm like, oh, I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. Second thing, oh, I'm about to graduate from college. Third, I'm about to prove to everybody back at home, because it was my peoples saying that I'll be back at home in the streets. It's my peoples that saying I'll be a thug, or I'm gonna be in jail, or I'll be dead before 18. I'm about to prove to them wrong. And fourth, I'm about to prove to this college professor. Thank you, college professor, for giving me wood to my fire.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerek Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by the Lab School of Washington, D.C. At the Lab School, they understand that every child learns differently. That's why they are dedicated to providing personalized education for students with learning differences, including dyslexia. With specialized programs tailored to individual needs, their experienced educators empower students to unlock their full potential and thrive academically, socially, and beyond. Discover a nurturing environment where every child is celebrated for their unique strengths. To learn more about Lab School, go to labschool.org. That's labschool.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. I'm your host, Winifred A. Winston.
And I'm LaDerek Horn.
And guys, I'm super excited. Today, we have with us Dion Butler. He is a speaker, mentor, author, and former NFL player for the Detroit Lions. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Yes.
What's going on, everybody? What's good? What's good? What's good?
Yes. So, Dion, tell us your journey into dyslexia and your reading challenges. When did it start for you? How did you know? Let's just dive right in.
So, I didn't find out about my dyslexia until the pandemic, around 27, 28 years old. But I start in middle school is where I started noticing that I wasn't like the other peers. Every time I would try to read, I'd be stuttering. I'll be skipping over lines. And my classmates would make a lot of fun of me. They would make fun of me, right? They'd be all joking on me. They'd be picking on me. And it got to a point where it was picking on me so bad that I stopped sitting in the front row seats. I stopped raising my hand. I stopped trying to read.
Right.
And I'm being bullied at this time. And that's when I started protecting myself and I started becoming a bully of the bullies, right? So I started being somebody that I wasn't. And I felt that I had to, because I felt stupid and dumb. I felt I was always called stupid and dumb. So I felt stupid and dumb. And I started doing things that made me look stupid and dumb. Always fighting, always getting kicked out of school. You know what I mean? Just finding any reason to go home. I lived with my grandma. I'm from Detroit, but we stayed in Inkster, Michigan. And it was 14 people living in a 2-bedroom house. So it's a lot of people. And there was a lot of trauma in the house as well. So not only did I face trauma inside my house, I also faced trauma in the school system. So there's nowhere really I can go. So I started wanting to be this gangster, like, all right, this is who I am. This is what I need to be. So I started being in the streets, started trying to hustle, trying to figure out how to survive. And my grandma is a godly woman. So she put me to the side and said, listen, if you're going to live under this house, you got to believe in God. You got to take care of your family and you got to take care of education. I have nowhere else to go. And I ain't want to be homeless. So that's when I made my mind up going to high school. This is what I wanted to do. And so I believed in God. I loved my mother, my father, my grandma, all my brothers and sisters. And I had to figure out a plan to keep me in school. So that's when I started playing basketball and football. But there's a problem. In order to play on a basketball team, you need to what? Keep a 2.5 GPA.
Right.
You have to have a 2.5 GPA. Think about this. How was I going to keep a 2.5 when I don't know how to read, when I don't know how to spell, when I don't know how to catch on to schoolwork? So I came up with a plan. And that plan was to go to class every day, perfect attendance, participate, participation points, and turn in my work no matter if it's right or wrong. Listen to me. I end up getting a 2.5.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? I did the bare minimal to get a 2.5. I just beat the system. Some of the players, some of our key players, superstar, supposed to be at Iowa and Alabama or Michigan, they got kicked off the team because they didn't have the grades. They can read. They can write. They were skipping school, going to go smoke, skipping school to go hang out with girls. See, I was like, I ain't got time for that. I can barely read and write. So at one point, I think it was in 10th grade, at one point I'm like, listen, I'm going to go to the league, I'm going to go to the NFL, or I'm going to go to the NBA so I can get my grandma, my mama, and my daddy out the hood, get my family out the hood. That whole time I had that mindset like, oh, I'm going to the league. I'm not even thinking about college. I saw LeBron James go from high school to the NBA. So my mindset, I'm about to do the same thing. So I play basketball. I become a superstar in basketball. And then my senior year, I play football. Only 1 year of high school football. And our quarterback, who's Devin Gardner, who's the quarterback at Michigan and went on to play for the Steelers, he came to me and said, hey, could you play on a football team? I said, all right, cool. When I say I balled out just that 1 year, I balled out and I was getting scholarships from a lot of schools because of Devin. The athletic director called me in his office and said, Deion, you got an opportunity to go to college. Now, that's when I started scaring myself away. I'm like, no, I ain't going to college. Remind you, my sister just graduated from high school at a 3.5, and my brother just graduated from high school, and they both was going to Tennessee State to get their degree. So I'm thinking you had to be smart and intelligent. I just did the bare minimal to graduate from high school, and I can't even read and write. So I'm like, no, I'm not going to college. He like, son, Coach Carter, that's his name, and he said, son, in order to go to the league, you got to go to college. I didn't know that at the time. So I got on a bus and I started thinking of a different plan. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to the league no more. I'm like, you know what? I'm a hustle. I'm gonna get in the streets. I'm scaring myself away from school. I only needed my grandma's approval. I just graduated from high school, reading at a fourth grade level, and I only needed my grandma's approval not to go to college. So I walked to her and I told her, like, Granny, I ain't going to college. I'm gonna pick these streets. I'm going to make some money. I'm going to hustle and pay the bills. When I tell you, look, she choked me so hard.
About to say, ain't no black grandma on earth going for that plan.
Hey, man, listen, you don't mess with no grandma with that type of plan. And she was already hearing that I had an opportunity to go to college. Mm-hmm. But the real true reason is I couldn't read or spell. I couldn't handle the education the way I wanted to. So when she choked me up, and at this time she's 5'2 and I'm 6'2, she scared the living crap out of me. I'm keeping it real with y'all. And she started talking to me with power and authority. Like, it's like my ancestors were speaking through her to get to me. And she said, you gonna go to college. You gonna do great things when you get to college. I ain't go to all them school meetings to hear them words come out your mouth. I worked 3 jobs, take you, your brother, your mama, your sisters into this house. And she choking me up and she talking to me. And my heart just paused. I'm scared in a mug. And she let me go. I went right in the room. I was about to slam the door, but that little lock on my neck hurt it. So I ain't slammed the door. But honestly, my grandma knew that I had a learning disability, but she didn't care for excuses. She knew I deserve an equal opportunity like anybody else. So my grandma believed in my dreams way more than I believed in them. I sat on the bed and I screamed, fire, I'm going to go to college. I'm just going to get kicked out. I'm just going to get kicked out because you got to think about it. High school and college is 2 different levels.
Yep, absolutely.
So I went to Central Michigan University and I thought to myself, I'm going to keep that same plan. I'm going to go to class every day. I'm going to participate. I'm going to turn in my work. Man, I just got hit with a rule of awakening my first class. I thought maybe since I play sports, I'd be able to get a degree in sports, right? So I took a class, sports management. I'm thinking it's just all about sports. I go to this class in this auditorium. The first day of school, I sit in the front row. I got all these people in this big auditorium. And the teacher say, who knows this city? The professor, he said, anybody know this city? I raise my hand. Oh, I know it. I'm thinking I'm about to use that same plan. I say a state because I didn't know my cities from my states. Whole auditorium laughing at me. Everybody, my football brothers is in here. Everybody in this class is laughing at me. Now, I was cool with just being the class clown because that's how I got through high school, just by blending in and being funny and outgoing. So I was cool with the class laughing at me, the whole auditorium. But it hurt my soul when I saw this white professor laugh at me. Mm. And I had to sit there, and he was laughing his butt off. Then he quieted the whole auditorium, and he looked me right in the face and said, I don't know how you ever made it to college. And you would never graduate from college. You will never accomplish anything. Now, at this point, I'm being real with y'all. I'm like, tears is coming down my face because I already knew I wasn't smart. I already knew that I couldn't read. I already knew these things. But now I'm on display in front of the whole auditorium. So he quieted everybody down and started teaching again. After class, I went right to my dorm and I called my grandma and I started screaming. Remind y'all, I couldn't talk clear. I know now, but I didn't know why I couldn't talk clear. I didn't know why my words was jibber jabber. And I didn't know why my brain worked that way. And I called my grandma, and the only way I could talk clear if I'm screaming, and I'm just screaming at her like, Granny, this teacher just told me I'd never graduate. He just called me dumb in front of the whole class. And she said, who you yelling at? I start yelling again, like, Granny, you ain't listening to me. This teacher just called me dumb and told me I was stupid. She said, you better take some of that bass out your voice. I say, Granny, you ain't listening. The teacher just called me dumb. She said, okay, now we getting somewhere. What my grandma said next was the best thing that ever happened to my life. It changed my whole perspective of college and also the world. She said, Dion, it's okay to ask for help. She said, Dion, it's okay to ask for help. I sat there on the phone and I thought to myself, my grandma would never steer me in the wrong direction. I just got to let go, let that ego go and just ask for help.
Right.
So the next day I walked right into the disability office and I screamed, I need some help. I need some help right now. I took that literally. The executive director, the chief, came out her office. It was like 7 or 8 people inside this office. Everybody paused. The executive director, the chief, came out and said, nobody touch him but me. You follow me. So I did all this evaluation, and they diagnosed me with ADHD, right? They didn't find out nothing about my reading problem. They just said that I'm a slow reader, da-da-da. I would go to my disability teacher every single day, and I realized a few things. She couldn't do my work for me, but she can read the questions for me because that's where I need help at. And when she would read to me, I figured out a few things. I heard the answers in the questions. So the whole time she reading to me, I pause and I'm like, oh, I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. Second thing, oh, I'm about to graduate from college. Third, I'm about to prove to everybody back at home, because it was my peoples saying that I'll be back at home in the streets. It's my peoples that saying that I'll be a thug, or I'm going to be in jail, or I'll be dead before 18. I'm about to prove to them wrong. And fourth, I'm about to prove to this college professor. Thank you, college professor, for giving me wood to my fire, giving me some gasoline to this car. So from that moment, I did everything that I could to go up and beyond to graduate from college. I was going to practice. I was going to my tutor. I was going to study table. I'm literally going to class every single day. I'm asking for help. I'm staying after class. I'm meeting with my professors. I'm going through hell in college. I had the roughest time in college because I had to go up and beyond because I couldn't read or write. I can write, but I couldn't really write straight. And I can master reading, but I didn't know how to read. So I will memorize words in the dictionaries, on the worksheets. So I will do all these things. And on top of that, going to football practice at 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to juggle this whole thing. I couldn't read the playbook. Mm-hmm. On the football side, I couldn't read the playbook. And I struggled, and I gave some of my teammates the worst times because It wasn't their fault. And when you mess up, you got to run suicides. When you're messing up the plays, the coach got to discipline you. Well, everybody thought I wasn't reading the playbook, but it just wasn't coming to me easy. I was studying the playbook morning to nighttime. So now my teammates hate me. They thinking I'm slacking off. I got all this talent, and they thinking I'm slacking off. My coaches is, I'm meeting with the coaches, and they getting frustrated, just like my teachers was getting frustrated, just like my parents was getting frustrated, right? So I'm seeing all this stuff happening, and I can't do nothing about it. And I'm still not telling people that I can't read until my senior year. So I wasn't able to display my full God-gifted talent until my senior year. That's when I like memorized this playbook, and this playbook was like a dictionary. And my position coach came to me and said, "Deion, what's going on? Why are you messing up the plays? Why are you going the wrong way?" And this same coach is the coach right now, the head coach at Michigan, Sharon Moore. He's the head coach at Michigan right now. And he was my position coach at the time. And he came to me and he said, "What's going on? Just talk to me." And this is a brother. This is a black coach. He came to me heart to heart. And he like, "Just be real with me." And I'm so scared because everybody that made fun of me, I'm traumatized at this time just to tell anybody that I can't read. I'm asking for help, but I'm not telling people I can't read. And he like, "Man, just, you gifted." He said, "You one of the most talented players on this team, but we can't play you if we don't trust you." And he's standing right in front of me. And I just, tears come down my face, and I just let go. I say, "Coach, I can't read." And I'm expecting him the whole time just to start laughing and start going crazy on me, start doing what everybody else do. But he like, "No, I got you." Mm-hmm. He said, "This is what I'm gonna give you some examples, and you go from there." Because I was messing up the audibles the most, right? So if I learn the plays, I still got to go through the audibles. And if you don't know what an audible is when a quarterback say 44 East, 44 West. I didn't know my East from my West. So every time the quarterback would make an audible, I mess up. But Coach Moore was like, "When you hear West, it sounds like left. It rhymes with left." I said, "Oh." He said, "What is East?" I was like, "It's right." Coach Moore made me feel so comfortable to the point where he gave me examples to learn. So I'll be on a whiteboard with color markers and just using examples to learn a playbook. At this time, I'm getting comfortable now. Now I'm embracing a playbook, and I'm about to show it on the field. Boom, I have a breakout season. I balls out my senior year to the point where after the season, the head coach called me to the office and said, "Every NFL scout is recruiting you right now." Boom, I graduate. I graduate from college reading at a fourth grade level. I just graduated from college reading at a fourth grade level. So I didn't get drafted when the NFL came around, but I got signed after the draft. And that's when I chose to pick Detroit Lions. So I just went through all that hard work. I just built this long relationship with this coach. And now I got to go to the next level. Now the NFL playbook is way much harder than the college playbook.
All right. Next level. Next level.
Next level. You get what I'm saying? I'm on the next level now. I'm on a whole nother level now. So I'm thinking to myself, once I walked in the locker room, I see Calvin Johnson, Matthew Stafford, Eric Ebron. I'm seeing all these players, and it's like a dream come true. Right. I'm about to get my family. My mind is, I'm about to get my family out the hood. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right?
Where, absolutely.
Like, I ain't forgot to go. I'm about to bust my butt to take my family to the next level.
Deion, I got to jump
in. Go ahead.
We ain't heard from grandma in a minute. What's grandma's reaction?
Man, look, man, head over heels. Can I show you a picture right quick?
Yeah, yeah. I know the audio is all audio, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, but can I show you a picture for you can see, though?
Okay, absolutely. Cool. So for everyone listening, Brother Deion stepped away. He's going to grab a photo. Man, and I'm listening to this story, and I'm fighting back tears. I'm fighting back tears, Deion, listening to your story, brother.
I appreciate you. So this is a visual of my grandma. She's short, right? And I'm this big tight end, this 6'4 tight end, right? And once I made it, she has tears of joy, right? My baby just made it after all that we've been through. He just made it. But here's the turn of it. Time kick in. She get diagnosed with cancer. So she in the hospital. While I'm at practice. So at the practice, I'm going right to the hospital, checking in on her. And she keep asking me, Deion, how you doing? How everything going? I'm lying to her. I'm like, everything is going good. I got to remind y'all. Once I sat down in the meeting rooms and we didn't have a playbook. Now everything is digital. First thing I'm looking to see if I can master these plays. Because that's the only thing that can stop me from reaching my full potential. I go to the plays and I just swipe it. Can I be real with y'all?
Absolutely, please.
I said, oh shit, not this again. I'm literally looking at these and I'm like, I can't really see what I can't say what I really want to say because a burst of fear just jumped on me. Now I'm overthinking everything. And I'm looking around in the meeting room and I hear my grandma's voice. All you got to do is ask for help. But I'm looking around and I'm seeing all these grown people, all these grown men.
And they
all
superstars.
Other players. They superstars.
Right.
In college, you cool, right? You with your peers. But I'm with some people, they grown. First thing I think, okay, they're going to laugh at me if I ask for help. And then if I go to the coach, he's going to start docking things off, right? Oh, he can't read. We don't need him. Oh, his IQ is low. All this stuff running through my mind. All I do is got to get up and ask for help. Everything that I had to face in the past started coming back. If you ask for help, you're going to get cut. They're going to look at you like you dumb, like you stupid. Everybody's fighting for a job here. They don't care if you can read or not. They want the job done. They paying you millions and millions of dollars to do the job right. They don't care about nothing else. So I said, okay, cool. I ain't going to ask for help. I'm just going to overwork myself on the field. Boom. I'm balling out at practice. I'm doing everything. I'm going through the drills. Even Calvin Johnson come up to me and shake my hand. Homie, you can catch. You got some hands. You run good routes. Go back to the hospital. Grandma say, how you doing? I said, Granny, everything going well. I ain't want to bring my problems to my grandma at this point. Nor is she my cheat code. All I got to do is say, Granny, I'm struggling again with the playbook. But now I see her on the bed. Boom, she's dying with cancer. Okay, cool. I go back to practice. Coach hit me up and say, hey, you got to go to the front office. Detroit Lions just cut me. I'm messing up the plays at practice. Boom. I said, okay, cool. They called me back. They must have been sitting around and said, he got some game. He can play. Let's see if this wakes him up. Let's see if this is going to help him in a playbook. I think that's what I'm thinking. Like, maybe he's going to finally open his playbook. Boom. I said, all right. I come up with a plan. I say, I'm gonna balls out at practice. I'm going to do everything I can except tell a coach that I can't read. I balls out in the biggest scrimmage. I scored 2 touchdowns. Coaches going crazy. The crowd going crazy. Players on the team going crazy. I run back. Coach pulled me to the side. Like, that was a great catch. That was a great route. But do you know you just scored a touchdown going the wrong way?
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Oh.
He said, we like that you just scored a touchdown, but it's the wrong route. Boom. I'm working my butt off. I'm just remembering what my college coach said. You know what I mean? Just block harder. Go 120, right? Make a heck of crazy blocks. Guys that 6'9", 290 I'm blocking. Coach is jumping up and down. Damn, Deion, that's a good block. Come here, let me talk to you, though. That was the wrong block. You keep messing up the plays. Why are you not in the playbook? So we get in the meeting room, and I remember my position coach say, we know who's happy to be here, and we know who want to be here. And I remind you, I love the kids. I'm all for my youth. So after practice, I hang out with the kids. I'm giving them my gloves. I'm giving them my shoes. Anything to boost their confidence up. And the coaches see that. So they like, he's happy to be here. He really don't want to be here. Instead of him being in that playbook, he's trying to be glamorous. But that wasn't the case. Boom, they cut me again. And my grandma died. My agent called me and said, Detroit Lions want to give you another chance. Some more teams want to give you another chance. They actually want you to go overseas. But y'all got to remember, my why was my grandma, my family, everything that I was doing, and she passed. So I said, you know what? No matter where I go, no matter what team I go to, I'm still going to have to face that playbook. I'm still going to have to learn how to read. I can't read. I don't know how to read. And I'm facing it within myself, but I can't face it with the world because nobody's teaching me how to read. So right. I walk away from football. I walk right away from football. They're like, hey, come on, come play again. I'm like, no, I'm going to always have to face this thing. So I got my degree in child development. I'd rather help kids. I'd rather get in the field and help kids and help them during their journey. And that's when, and I'm gonna turn over the mic to you. This one gonna blow your mind. I get a job at an educational liaison, working with like CYF, working with inner city kids and trying to help them through their journey.
Yeah, yeah. What year did you graduate from college?
I grew 2015.
Okay.
My grandma passed 2016 when I was with the Lions, and then my mother passed in 2017. So I went through a lot of stuff, right? But this is about to hit you right here. As an education liaison, I'm working with this kid, and story just like mine, inner city kid. And I'm taking him to an IEP meeting. And this is the turn pointer right here. I ask him like, hey man, why you getting in trouble? Why you keep getting kicked out of school? Why you ain't taking care of your schoolwork? And he finally just opens up, man, Mr. Dion, man, I can't read, man. I'm always hungry and I'm tired of these foster homes and this and this. So I just tell him my story. I'm like, look, man, I graduated from high school and I couldn't even read. I graduated from college and I couldn't read. He like, no, Mr. Dion, man, you lying, bro. This is a gangster. This is a full gangster kid. This kid is a full hood nigga, right?
Right.
He like, man, Mr. Dion, you lying, man. You can read, bro. You professional. You got this big time job. You do art. You got this nice car, man. I'm like, man, listen, I worked my butt off, but I couldn't read. We go to the IEP meeting. He like, you know, he like, you know what, Mr. Dion, I'm a change. I'm gonna get my stuff together. We walk into the IEP meeting room. You got the teachers, the lawyers, the caseworkers, everybody. This kid is ready to fix his problems. Soon as we walk in there, they jump down his throat. Whole time I'm looking at his schoolwork and I'm like dazed off because his handwriting looked just like mine. His spelling looked just like mine. And they jump down his throat. That's what he did. He blows up. They backed him in the corner and they like punishing him. And he couldn't even get a word off. In that moment, I realized, okay, I can't be in this work field because I can't do anything about it. And when you're working for somebody, you can only do certain things, right? Your job description. So that's when the pandemic hit. I started running on the trails and I'm going for runs because there's nothing else you can do.
Right.
My wife tells me she's pregnant. Instantly, like this need to fix my reading problem jumps on me. I go to the trails and I started talking to God, confessing, God, I don't know how to read. I did everything I was supposed to, God. Why can't I read? I stayed away from the drugs. I stayed away from the gangs. I did everything I was supposed to. I didn't even want to go to college, God, but I went to college. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I stayed away from the trouble. I'm a good man. Why can't I read? I want to be that father that read to my daughter. My father didn't read to me. Nobody read to me. I got a problem and all I want to do is read to my daughter. God said, go fight for education. This is what I hear. I said, God, how can I fight for education when I don't know how to read? I don't know how to speak. He said, I'll be with you, son. And I'm running. And I'm just confessing and I'm thanking him. Boom, I get on Facebook and I started telling my story because he said, go fight for it. I just started telling my story. This is what I did. Then I run into my tutor. Then she teach me the Orton Gillingham. For 3 years, I worked with my tutor from the pandemic to now, working with my tutor, studying. But before I learned about the Orton Gillingham, I was in a basement and I had ordered 3 books and I'm studying how to read. And I realized a few things. Okay, I'm missing lines. I'm skipping words. I can't say certain words. I take a nap. I fall asleep because I'm working my butt off. And I hear dyslexia, dyslexia. I wake up screaming, dyslexia, dyslexia. YouTube it, because you know what I mean? That's only, you know, now time.
That's the research, right?
Yeah, that's the research.
Right, right.
Didn't find nothing. So I'm spitting everything on social media. And then that's when my tutor introduced me to the Orton Gillingham. Then
OG.
We working together. The OG. how to break down syllables and everything. And I say it was the best experience. I'm crying like in real tears, going through this whole journey of learning how to read. And then I break through. Then I'm reading books. I didn't even used to read the Bible. I could only listen to it. Now I read the Bible and I decode everything. I got a reading addiction problem now.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying? Like, I read to my daughter and she reenact what I do. And this is why I do what I do. I got to tell this to the whole world because I know I'm not the only one. So that's where I'm at right now. You get what I'm saying?
Oh my goodness. All right. All right.
I don't even know what's next. Like, I'm just listening and I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, oh my gosh. And when you said, from middle school, when you started acting out, at first you were sitting in the front.
Yep.
You were participating. You were locked in. And the sad part is with our young Black youth, they look at behavior and not the academics. You were sitting in the front. Why nobody said, well, look, why you go to the back? You were just in the front. They looking at behavior and they started with the suspension. So like you said, I thought I was dumb. So I started acting dumb. So I started doing dumb shit. I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then it just carried on through.
It follows you.
Amazing.
Mm. You got to think about it. Like this whole journey from middle school is like, I'm seeing something different from my perspective. All these people acting the same. When you can't read or write, they treat you the same way, like you dumb. But really, I'm intelligent, super intelligent. You get what I'm saying? Some of the most genius are dyslexic people, key people with dyslexia, people with learning disability. So I'm seeing all these people act a certain way. Guess what I started doing? Started believing in it. Society's telling me I'm dumb. Really, internally, I know I'm smart. I know the answer, but my internal voice is like, no, don't say it. I know how to fix the problem, but internally, it's just, if I say something, they're going, oh, no, you stupid. We don't believe you. You can't even read. You see what I'm going with that? It's like from middle school, high school to college, I'm seeing the same behaviors from teachers, from my peers. And it's like, you know what? Why would anybody want to say they can't read when we hound people that can't read? We don't give them the job they need when they can't read. We don't elevate them.
It's a catch-22 because it's like, okay, you can't read, but they know when they're engaging with you, they're talking to you, that you're not dumb.
Exactly. Right.
So that's when they say, oh, you better work hard, or you playing. You know what I'm saying? Because when they're talking to you and they seeing you, they're like, oh, you're smart. They're not even thinking. That's the misconception, is that if you can't read, you lack intelligence, right? Reading and intelligence do not go hand in hand. Right. So when you're intelligent and they see all of that, they just assume you're reading. Right. And so that's the catch-22 with it, because when they engage with you, your coaches were like, we know you the bomb, you good, you a damn hard worker. So they see that you're not slacking off there because you're a hard worker, but then you can't read. So they don't even understand what you're internalizing and how you are internalizing that and what you're dealing with.
That stigma.
Who's that first college professor? What's his name?
I know, right? I know, man. Look.
No, listen, we ain't going after him. Don't go after him.
But look,
had a whole audience.
That's the thing. That's the thing. That's the thing. We got. I thank him. You know what I mean? I truly thank him because without him, I wouldn't have went to my grandma, and then I wouldn't have asked for help, and then I wouldn't have realized how intelligent I truly am. You know that I'm truly are. Right? If that makes sense. So it's like, you know what? I don't even want to hate you. I don't even want that in my heart. But I am gonna tell you. I'm gonna tell people what you did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
Deanna, I want to go back. You know, like one of the reoccurring themes in your story is this openness to go for help. And I'm really touched. Like I'm fighting back tears, and in part it's because you're in many ways telling my own story, you know, and I think the story of a lot of us who have struggled through education, you know, with dyslexia, particularly the not knowing what is possible when we start asking for help. And, you know, I really was connecting to you when it was like you walked in that disability support office in college, and it was the tutor, the support staff there starting to read the stuff to you and it clicking, like, not only am I going to, you know, be able to learn this stuff, but I'm going to graduate from college. And just if you could just, you know, like just speak to the audience that power of asking for help and using those accommodations and those supports.
So once I figured that, you know, the help was the key, that's when I started owning it. So to the people that's listening, no matter where you are, no matter how you learn, once you own it, you become powerful. Nobody can break you when you own you, right? Nobody can break you when you're trying to move forward. They can get in your way, but they can't stop you. So once I said, oh, I'm going to own this in school, that's when I said, oh, I'm going to own this on the football field. And that's what I said. Okay, I'm going to own this over my whole life. So when you say that I can't do it, I'm just going to own you now, right? And I'm going to prove you wrong. So that's what that internal drive is. Okay, I can't get that promotion. Well, let me own it.
Right.
If that makes sense, it's like, once you absolutely own this, you build that internal drive to make sure that you finish whatever you start. I could have easily gave up. It's a lot of people that I know, a lot of my friends that dropped out of college, and they was on the honor roll, right? They was the ones in high school with the purple jackets.
Mm.
And it's like, okay, cool. I ain't giving up. All I got to do is keep fighting through it.
Yeah. But that adversity is what's making you stronger. And I'm also, you know, I've had an opportunity to connect with a few folks in the NFL, and I'm as you're telling your story about being a professional athlete, struggling with the plays, and having to constantly feel like you got to take it up another level physically. I'm just like a brother. I'm just like, yo, I know you're fighting a battle emotionally, right? Because there's that shame and you're not be able to open up for help. But I have to also, and I just wanted to like highlight this, the physical toll of what you must have been doing. I mean, the NFL is enough physical punishment, but I can imagine kind of where you were taking it. Your physical and your mental were both being stressed tremendously. Absolutely. And I mean, none of us should have to go through that, but it is that adversity that makes us stronger, you know, makes us stronger.
When you have a why, which was my grandma, and no matter what your why is to anybody in the audience, when you have one person that's helping you and that believe in you, that's all you need, right? So I was willing to sacrifice my body, right? Go through all the pain, all the hard work. And I was willing to go through the shame too, mentally. But I lost myself a little bit when I couldn't find an answer to why I couldn't read. Like, it makes no sense, right? I'm doing all this hard work. I'm asking for help. I'm studying. Why is it not clicking? But as soon as I found out that I was dyslexic, everything started making sense, right? So like the whole time throughout my whole journey, right? All the trauma that I'm going through, that's the storm, right? The storm that you're carrying, that you can't read, the shame, and it's all over you. But as soon as I learned that about dyslexia, it went away. Mm. It's like...
There's a name for it. There's a name for it. This is a.
I got the cure, right? And I'm not trying to say I'm sick because it's not a sickness at all. But at the same time, that's how I was moving through life. It's like people feeling shame for me and I'm feeling shame about this. This is like nothing to be ashamed about. It's nothing to be ashamed about not knowing how to read. The shame come from is not figuring it out, right? Like not caring that you can't read. We should care about these things because reading is some of the most important things in this world. And when you can read, people assume you're intelligent or they assume you're smart. They give you that promotion. They give you that raise. They don't disrespect you, right? But you coming off as you dumb and you can't read, that's when you start getting the feedback of the negativity from other people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Brother Dan, we know that you've made this pivot now into sharing your story, but it's clear on your website and, you know, we sort of prepped before we started recording. What's the work you're doing now around legislation and policy work connected to dyslexia? Can you just talk to the audience about what that is and why it's important to you?
So, yeah, absolutely. Some states do not consider dyslexia being a real thing in a way, or a real, it falls under the category of learning disability, but they don't acknowledge it in the school and they don't have a tool for you to fix it or help you. So some of these teachers are not trained in spotting kids with dyslexia. So right now I'm working with a lot of legislations and I'm working with a lot of people on the bills about the science behind reading. There's truly science that's proven that if you take this route, everybody will learn how to read. Just not a certain population, just not a 50% of people, but the left brain and the right brain of people. Everybody have a brain. And either you left brain or you right brain or you ambidextrous or whatever the case that is, right? So right now I'm in this fighting with the legislation, passing bills and telling my story to get people to see that this is a real thing. And once you're able to use the science behind reading, then we are able to fix the problem. I couldn't even give interviews during football because my mind, my brain wasn't connected or activated, right? And I couldn't speak. So they wouldn't let me do interviews. I couldn't call plays. I couldn't do none of them things. But how do I sound now?
You sound great, brother. You didn't speak.
Man, listen, brother. Once I learned how to read, it's like, is a part in the brain that start glowing up. I was the MVP and I couldn't go to the microphone, right? I can't even tell my story or why I bawled out. They news reporters asking about me, but they had to like redirect it because I couldn't talk clear enough to get my point across. I make a lot of sense right now. And I'm very confident about what I do right now. all because the science behind reading, the connections that I made. Then I started making sense. So right now, I'm showing them that this is real. I'm showing them that the kids, the people that's in prison, they're intelligent, but they can't read. And they're reading a fourth grade level. It's a connection there. When you can't read, people assume you dumb. And when you assume you dumb, you have to find a different way to survive. And the only way you can figure out how to survive is by doing something to make some money or whatnot, right? There's a pathway there. So my goal and what I'm hoping is to save the future kids that's going through these same things so they won't go that other route where they have to go break in somebody's car, where they got to sell drugs, where they got to put on this fake persona that I'm a gangster, when really you a good person in the heart. You just trying to make a way. And I ain't doubting you, and I ain't sweating you at all, but you just trying to make a way. You scared. The truth is you scared to tell people you can't read.
Yeah.
And you should be.
Mm.
So that's what I do for the law. So when they pass these laws, now the teachers get to catch it. Now the teachers get to give you the right tools to the parents, so the parents can properly advocate for their child. They can properly say, hey, this is why my child can't read, or this is the reason why my child needs this extra help. So it's to educate the parents and the teachers to be able to support the kids the most, because that's who interacting with these kids right now. The most is the teachers and the parents.
Yeah.
Then that's how we guide them. Boom.
Yeah, it's key. It's key, you know, and I don't think enough people in society generally understand how our educators aren't prepared to educate all students. You know, there are some folks who can just sit in a classroom and get words thrown at them and they're going to pick up literacy. They're going to learn how to read. They're going to learn how to spell and they're going to be all right. But there's a lot of us out here that need science-based, much more regimented programs, and that the level of awareness about what dyslexia is in our educators is still very, very low. And so they're focusing on behavior. That forces the kid and the family to focus on behavior. We get these young people who get, you know, I guess the term is really disenfranchised, right? It's like, all right, school's not for me, so college is not for me, no higher education or trainings for me. And they're just slowly cutting out the options that they have for their life until they're going to risk it all on something that's, you know, going to line them up in a, you know, in a box, whether it be a cell or underground.
Can I piggyback on that, Luderic?
Yeah, of
course. So look, you're 100% correct. So I'm right now a motivational speaker. So I'm going to every community. Let me tell you what I see. In the white community, they're embracing their dyslexia because they have the right resources. I'm talking to like doctors, right? And I'm talking to lawyers and I'm talking to people and they families. And they like, you know, I have dyslexia too. We embraced it. But then I go to the hood and I go to the black community and they don't want to, no, I don't know how to read. They fighting against it. These are entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs in this community. And they like, all right, well, what do I need to get where I need to go, right? So on one hand, you got people that's accepting it, and then you got, on the other hand, people fighting against it. Now, I'm not saying this is most, not all, right? I'm not about to say everybody fighting against it and everybody's going to be successful. But what I do know for a fact is what I'm seeing. When you accept it at a younger age, you get the right resources, you get an equal, fair and playing ground on a battlefield.
Right, right.
Do that make sense? Instead of having to fight through all the jungle and all the stuff that go trying to hide, they like, no, look, what do I need to do? Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? Like, think about Walt Disney. He was dyslexic. I mean, he got help around when he was in middle school. Now nobody will never forget Walt Disney.
Right.
Einstein. All these other super successful, Whoopi Goldberg and all these other people. You get what I'm saying? Very successful because they embraced it. Well, we need to make sure that we are getting these other kids and these families to embrace how intelligent these kids are so they can fix the future for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. This has been wonderful, Dion. I can't thank you enough. Like this has been amazing. So
this is the episode I think we have spoke the least. We just like, let's just be quiet and let this brother tell his story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. So with the legislation, is that just in Detroit? Are you helping others in other states? How are you getting the word out?
So right now it is in Michigan and Lansing, and which is the capital. I am working with a few people in Pittsburgh, but not as strongly, because it takes a lot of work to get these laws passed. And then when you talk about trying to switch the game up or switch a whole program in an organization or in a state, you know, you have the kickback people, the people that fight against it. Yeah. And there's some strong, powerful people. But here's the thing. You can't fight with the truth, right? And some of these people that's fighting against it, their kids are dyslexic.
Ain't that the truth? Isn't it always that way? The folks that got the most to say are oftentimes the ones who are in the closet about it for whatever reason.
For real. So I am doing it in different states. It comes with a lot. That's why I appreciate this platform, this opportunity to speak, because our people need this the most. And the more we educate our own people, the more we'll be able, society will be better in the long run. So to answer your question is, right now it's East Lansing, a little bit in Pittsburgh, but I'm most definitely, I'm trying to be careful with my words, is I'm opening up to working with other legislatures in different states. Sneakily, I am doing some of it, but right now I'm sticking to Lansing and Pittsburgh a little bit right now.
Yeah,
your time is valuable, and we're going to wrap up shortly. But the question is occurring to me, and I wonder, since you've been more open about your experience, more aware, and then talking about your experience with dyslexia, have you heard from or been in contact with any of your old teammates or any of those old coaches in the NFL? You know, and I'm thinking about the being cut and what have you. But you know, now it's like you can point to, hey, here's what the challenges were. Do you hear from them, or you're in contact with them at all?
So if you don't know, like, some of the coaching staff changes throughout the year, but I still talk to a lot of my college coaches, and they're so proud of me because they never knew, right? And they never understood what the problem was. And they super proud of me, and they're helping me also in a journey. And also I get to go speak to and help other kids on that football level, because a lot of our African-Americans taking up some of the most of them, if not are the roster. And if that is the case, I guarantee you 10 or 20 of them are dyslexic, or they struggle with reading, and they from the hood, right? Or if they're not from the hood, they from the suburbs that still struggle with this part in their life. So my coach at Michigan, Coach Moore, he's not surprised. He's very proud of me and the route that I took, because I could have turned easily back to the streets, especially after my mom passing away. So the answer to your question is, I'll make this quick. When I first told the world and my peoples back at home, and it be your own peoples, man, sometimes. Mm. I told some of my friends who I thought were my friends, that I told them that I was dyslexic, and they was like, oh, he's stupid. We're going out to eat, and I'm paying for it, but I asked for some change, and they just assumed that I'm just dumb, right? And they cheated me off some money, and I'm watching the whole thing, right? And I didn't even say nothing, because it's like if it's that bad, then I thank you for showing me who y'all are, right? But that's just not with my own peoples. It's in the world, you know what I mean? Constantly being ripped off by people that think you stupid, man. So it sucks to know that people think you're not intelligent or you stupid, and they can try to pull whatever tricks on you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna leave with that, man. It's like, we must do better. We must help one another. We must continue to educate one another. And if you are struggling, please let somebody know so we can help you and get you where you need to go.
Right. All right. Brother Dion, man, as we close out, do you have one piece of advice that you want to send out to, and I would say both the educators, but also the legislators, the policymakers who, you know, are, you know, now wrestling with some of these bills related to dyslexia screening and making sure that our educators have the supports they need to help students who are dyslexic. What's your piece of advice out to them?
So to any educators, to any lawmakers, to anybody that's listening to this, number one, dyslexia is real. Number two, education is the key to success. Education is the key to success. And if we want to build a better life for the future, we must educate our young people. We must educate our young people. That means we must pass these laws. without any fight. If it's helping us, if it's going to better us, we need to pass it so in the future, we don't have to run through these same problems no more, right? And if education is the key, then let's unlock some of our people out of jail, out of prison. Let's help one another to become better. And I don't care what community it is, Black, Hispanic, white, whatever the case may be, but let's help one another. And remember, education is the key. And that's what I got to get to my people's mind.
Oh, thank you so much, Dion. That was amazing. So there you have it, guys. This has been a wonderful episode. We're so grateful for Dion sharing his story. And just stay tuned for our upcoming episodes.
Hold up. Before we close out, Dion, if folks want to reach out to you to support the work you're doing, be in contact with you, help you with, you know, there are a lot of folks that are hosting conferences and different events and could use a talented speaker like you. How should they reach out to you?
So you can go on my website, www.dionbutler.com. You can follow me on Instagram, the_dyslexic_king.
And oh my goodness, I love that, brother. I love that.
God blessed me on Father's Day when I was going through all this stuff, and he gave me a daughter. I done fought for everything, right? And he said, here you go, son. You become a king. You become a prophet. You become a leader. And one thing that I asked for was to be a good man and a good father. And he blessed me with a daughter on Father's Day. So I named myself the dyslexic_king. And I owned it. And on Facebook, you can find me under Dion L. Butler. So remember, it is two Dion Butlers in this world. One played for the Seahawks and the other one played for Detroit Lions. Man, it's hard because we run into it. But if you do want to reach out to me, the best bet would be on my website. It's www.dionbutler.com.
All right, Dion, thank you so much. And there you have it. Another episode of the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Dion Butler. Thank you so much.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic Podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic Podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic Podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.